from the island of Corfu and brought to you on Amazing Affiliates, Back Sports Channels, Talk Superstation, Cosmic Radio, Armed Forces Radio, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and BaseballPodcast.net. This is The Phil Nason Show.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Welcome to The Phil Nason Show, the international sports show with the local sports radio flavor. I'm Phil Nason, and I'm the host of this daily sports show, and I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to listen from wherever you are. Coming up later on, Alex Hall will be here to talk hot stove baseball, Oakland A's baseball, talk about a couple of American League trades that affected the American League West. But up first, from bloggingmets.com, please welcome my friend Mark Berman to the show. How you doing, Mark?
I'm pretty good. How about you, Phil?
I'm doing fantastic. I have to make this small announcement, though. If you are listening to this show on Talk Superstation every night at 10 p.m. Eastern, next week, this show won't be there. And instead, they're running Snark Week. And they will have a host of comedians like Richard Pryor, Sam Kinison. You're going to hear all kinds of clips, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And we return the following Monday. So don't worry, we haven't gone anywhere at all. We're just been preempted a bit. But you can still find us.
So they're taking you off to put on a bunch of dead comedians?
Yeah, but it's okay because they're more famous than me.
I suppose, but they're dead.
Yeah, but it is what it is. And we love being on Talk Superstation, and it just goes with the territory. But they even preempted Mary Lou Henner, so it's all good.
And she's lovely.
Yes, she is.
You know, it was funny. I was watching Taxi last night. It's on one of these, you know, small cable networks. And she was just beautiful back in the day.
She still is.
I mean, yeah, she looks good now. But back when she was in her 20s, she was the hottest thing going.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? She made taxi cab drivers attractive.
Yeah.
Good Lord. I always wanted to have her pick me up in the car.
You and me both, my friend.
Yeah.
I saw her in an elevator once. I had a girlfriend who interned at Letterman, and she took me up to the offices, and she was in the elevator with Al Roker. It was like the five of us, and they were joking around. It was kind of funny.
She's something, boy.
Yeah. And she has this crazy memory where she remembers, like, everything.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see if she would remember that elevator ride. Like, I assume she would because Al Roker was there, but I doubt she'd remember me. But it's just... But maybe she would. Maybe that memory thing is pretty bizarre.
She's not shy about telling it like it is either.
No.
And she'll tell you what she did and didn't do, so you can't spread rumors about her because she's straight with her life. And that's a good thing. But speaking of rumors, well, we finally saw something not be a rumor. Chris Young is now a member of the New York Mets thanks to, in part, Captain David Wright. What do you think about this signing of Chris Young? Because the Mets faithful are poo-pooing it. They don't like it. Boy, oh boy, I got called all kinds of names because I think this is fantastic for the New York Mets. What do you think?
I think I'd rather talk about Mary Lou Henner again than Chris Young.
Well, who wouldn't? But this.
Yeah. No, you know what? I don't think it's fantastic. I can't say it's fantastic because I don't know enough about him, and it remains to be seen. I'm not as upset as all the Mets fans seem to be. I think it's a decent gamble. I mean, the guy has power. That's clear. The last 2 years, he's been injured and hasn't been playing full-time, so he only hit 12 and 14 home runs, respectively, over the past 2 years. But before that, he was, you know, he's basically a 25-home-run guy, and the Mets don't have anyone like that. So I think from that aspect, it's not a bad signing. My fear is they paid him a lot. They paid him $7.25 million, which... In today's game, may not be a lot, but for the Mets, considering they have a $30 million payroll, that's, you know, a big chunk of, you know, 25 to 30, I'm sorry, not payroll, 25 million, 25 to 30 million to spend. That's a big chunk of that. So to spend it on someone who is kind of on the downswing and may not come back, may not be the best thing. I'm also concerned that this is their one big signing for this season. I mean, if he's the best player the Mets get, this is trouble. But if he's a complimentary piece, if they go out and get another big bat, then I have no problem with the signing.
I think this is a fantastic signing. You know, when you think about Chris Young, you think about home runs, and he hit a lot of them for Arizona. The problem is two things happened. One, he got injured. Two, he got traded, which he didn't want to see happen. And three, they moved him to a new position, they being Oakland. So he had a lot going on. He knew it was his last season. He knew his contract was up. And it's just a lot weighed on his mind. He's a smart kid. He's a great kid. Sandy Alderson has connections with the Oakland A's. The only reason the Oakland A's didn't re-sign him was because they didn't have any room for him. You know, don't forget, he was a platoon guy for Oakland. He wasn't an everyday starter. And that had a lot to do with that mentality and probably had a lot to do with why his career batting average dropped a bit. This is a fantastic signing. You know what? Who are you going to get for the New York Mets? $30 million is all you got? $7 million, that's cheap, technically. You're not going to find anybody less who can do what he can do or what he has the potential of doing because we've already seen him do this. I mean, we've already seen him have a couple of great seasons. Now he strikes out a bit? Sure. Is he hit 300? Will he ever? Probably not. But he is better than anything that they had out there last year.
Very true. And his on-base percentage, which was bad last year, was only 280, isn't terrible. He's a career 235 hitter. His on-base percentage is 315. Considering he's a 235 hitter, that's not bad. He does walk a good amount. And like you said, he's better than whatever they had out there. So you can't argue with that. But he can't be the centerpiece of their offseason. They need to get someone else.
Yeah, and they probably will. You know, it looks like they're going to try. I mean, look, not hardly any teams have done anything, to be honest with you. Sure. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there.
Yeah, a lot of Mets fans are taking offense to the fact that it's been such a slow start. But everything is slow. I mean, you think about it, you know, Chu and Ellsbury and Cano, the three top free agents, you're not hearing anything about them, about being linked to teams, or you're not hearing much about them at all. So it's a slow start. The winter meetings are in 2 weeks. So that's when things are going to get going, I think.
That's when David Wright re-signed last year during that meetings. And he talked about it with Mike Francesa. He was interviewed, and, you know, he did say this. Like a lot of Mets fans, I'm pretty impatient as well. But you know what? This is baseball. This is the way it is. No one has done anything yet.
Yeah.
You know, give the guy a chance to do something. And unfortunately, I don't know what New York Mets fans expect, to be honest with you. Even if he does spend the entire $30 million, which he doesn't have to do, and at the end of the day, it's not his money anyway. It's the owner's money. So he's got to get permission to spend what he spends. Even if he does, how much of a difference is it actually going to make for the 2014 New York Mets, Mark?
Not a whole heck of a lot because it's only $30 million. I mean, I think Mets fans are just frustrated when payroll just keeps going down and down and down. It's going to be $87 million this year or around that number, which is less than it was last year, regardless of what the Mets say. And I think fans know, even, you know, at that payroll level, there's nothing they can do because they just will not sign any. You get what you pay for. And if the Mets are, you know, scraping the bottom of the barrel, that's what you get. And I think that's really what is frustrating to the Mets fans. And I mean, I trash Alderson all the time because I don't think he's doing a good job. But it does come down from the Wilpons. They're the ones saying, hey, this is what we have to spend. And I felt bad for them with the Madoff thing because they certainly were victims. But if they can't operate the Mets like a big market team, then they should just sell. But you know what? They're never going to sell because they love owning the team too much.
Plus, they make money because of the Mets. And that's what I was trying to explain to some irate New York Mets fans. The team might be losing money, but the team is only one part of what they make their money from. And it's because they own the Mets that they make a lot of money. Because of that Mets team. The digital rights alone and the jersey sales alone is more money than most of us will ever see in five lifetimes.
Yeah, and the network is a cash cow. So they're, you know, like you said, the team is probably losing money, but they're raking it in when it's all said and done.
Yeah, they can afford to lose on the Mets because all the other things that, because of the Mets, put money in their pockets. And they don't have to spend any. And that's just it. They don't have to. But there's a lot of talk out there. I think it's just big Facebook talk, really. I had a guy tell me that being on the All-Star team was like the Holy Grail. And I'm thinking, what? The whole All-Star game is a popularity contest. How is Pablo Sandoval an All-Star? He's an All-Star because the New York Mets fan base is too lazy to get off their dead asses and vote. And they need guys like us, Mark, and Craig Carton to beg them to vote. Otherwise, David Wright wouldn't have been an All-Star this season.
Yeah, true. I mean, being in the All-Star game is still, I don't think it's the Holy Grail, but it is an impressive thing to have been in an All-Star game, because it shows that, you know, you had one of the best first halves of all of baseball. But yeah, a lot of times when you're voted in, it's a popularity contest. But if you don't get voted in and you get picked, you know, it's for ability. And for the most part, fans actually get it right. Every now and then there's this Pablo Sandoval over David Wright. But overall, I think the fans do a pretty good job.
Sure, I do. I agree. But I got myself into trouble, as usual, when I said that if David Wright were in the American League, he wouldn't be an All-Star.
Right, we talked about that. There are several third basemen there. You're probably right, but it doesn't take away from the fact that he's a great player.
And that's what I got accused of, is disparaging him because he's on his way out. And I'm not disparaging him at all. I've been very clear about this. I think he's a fantastic baseball player. I don't think he's a very good leader, honestly. And honestly, to be completely honest, I want to see that kid get a chance to play in the postseason and redeem himself from the bust he was the last time because he was a kid. He deserves a chance to play in the All-Star game. Anytime, in the postseason. This is a kid who went out there and they go, oh, you disparage him. No, I don't. This is a kid who played with a broken back for 2.5 months and was still knocking the ball out of the yard. This is a guy who was playing with basically a blown out hamstring and was still better than most guys. But one guy can't carry a baseball team. And unfortunately, this young fella has been asked to do the impossible. And it's sad to me. And I want to see him get on in an organization that A, is going to actually care about him, and B, give him the opportunity to demonstrate just how freaking good he is or not when it counts. That's what I want to see for this guy.
Okay, which is nice. See, I don't really feel bad for him because he had the choice of staying in New York or not, and he chose to stay with the Mets. He wants to play his whole career in New York. He grew up, you know, in Virginia, in the Tide, you know, I guess it was Tidewater Tides back then. And then the Norfolk Tides were the local teams. He was always a Mets fan. So this is his dream, was to play with the Mets and play his whole career with the Mets. And I think, you know, obviously he wants to play in the postseason. He wants to win a World Series like everybody else. But I think from what he said, another one of his goals is to play his whole career with the Mets. And he had the choice last, you know, a year ago at this time, to knowing what the Mets have. To either stay or leave, and he chose to stay. So I really don't feel bad for him. I would like to see him shine in the postseason also, and hopefully it'll be with the Mets.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. The situation right now doesn't dictate that belief, though. But, you know, there's a lot of people in social media who are saying that David Wright should demand to be traded. Now, I've been on the bandwagon for a long time that they should have traded him a long time ago and started this whole thing from scratch, which is probably what Sandy Alderson would have done if it were up to him. Well, I don't believe he makes the decisions at the end of the day. But should David Wright demand to be traded?
No, I don't think so at all. Again, it's up to him. He wants to play for the Mets. It's that simple. I think at the end of the day, if he doesn't win a World Series, he'll still be happy that he played his entire career with one team and that one team was the Mets. So, no, he shouldn't ask to be traded.
Yeah, I don't think so. I wouldn't ask to be traded either. He, like I said to these guys, and I've said it to you 100 times, he has the best gig in baseball because he can play on a below-average team. He's in New York City. He's got all these opportunities to shine off the field as well as on. The fans worship him no matter what he does and whatever. And they all know that at the end of the day, the Wilpons are just not going to spend the money that is required to put together a competitive organization over a period of years. They just don't want to do that. They've demonstrated that. They have spent money, bad money after bad money, and maybe they're just snake bit. I don't know. But this is something that's came in too, Mark, and this probably will carry us right through the rest of the show, I think.
Okay.
When will it finally be time for Mets fans to just boycott the Mets? Or will that ever happen? Now, you and I are old enough to remember Grant's Tomb.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about that in an article that I wrote for Sports 360 magazine, which was really cool. I thought that was interesting that they asked me to do it. But when is it time to boycott the Mets?
You know, that's a good question. And I alluded to that a little bit on my blog a month ago or something, that if Alderson doesn't do anything again, I think there could be a full-blown boycott. I mean, we've stuck through this team. They had five straight losing seasons. We've had three straight with Alderson, the guy who's supposed to, you know, save us from further losing. And he hasn't done anything. And he kept saying because of the contracts and all that stuff, which is reasonable. But now those contracts are gone, Santana and Bay. The money's cleared up. Allegedly, the Madoff thing is settled. So this was the year that they're supposed to go out and get new players. And this is the year I think all Mets fans have been looking towards. And if he does nothing again or very little, I think there could be a full-blown boycott because it's just enough is enough. But here's what I was thinking. I thought of this week, the thought popped in my head, and I'm going to write about this soon. Maybe the Mets fans should do the opposite and not boycott the team and really go to Citi Field and sell out every game. Because here's why. The Wilpons keep saying, oh, you know, attendance is going down and revenue is going down, so we don't have the money to put into new players. But then again, if they don't have good players, people won't go to the game, so it's just a vicious cycle. So maybe Mets fans should go to the games, sell out every game, buy hot dogs, buy jerseys, buy everything, give the Wilpons all this money, and then see if they actually spend the money next offseason. And if they don't, then boycott them. Because then there'll be no excuses. It'll be like, you just drew 3.5 million fans. The team made a fortune. But you're still not spending money. We're done with you. So that's just an idea. What do you think of that?
I think it's interesting. There's no question about that. For me, geez, baseball's entertainment for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can shut the Mets. I don't live in New York, so I can shut the Mets off anytime I want. If I shut off my computer, the Mets don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Technically. So for me, it's pretty easy to do these things. But honestly, I don't think anyone's going to boycott. They just talk smack on Facebook. And even if they do, why get so riled up over something that has nothing truly to do with them? This is just like going to Starbucks at the end of the day. If you don't like the freaking coffee, just go to the next coffee shop. There's one in every corner. Go root for the Yankees. Just become a baseball fan or take up knitting or something or go see a psychologist or a psychotherapist. You know, I had this one guy, Mark, because I always enjoy chatting with the Mets fans. I always put a smiley next to my at the end of my sentence to let people know I'm just joking.
Mm-hmm.
He called me a female dog. He was alluding to the fact he thought I was gay.
Because you use the smiley face?
Yeah. that's the mentality of some of the New York Mets fans. And that's one of the reasons I wrote some of the things that I wrote in that article about how they just want to devour each other. At the end of the day, you're a customer of this team. You don't play for the New York Mets. You don't derive a living because of the New York Mets. Now, we do because we have blogs and radio shows or whatever, but we don't make our sole living off the New York Mets.
Right.
If the New York Mets closed for business tonight, I wouldn't care. I would say, okay, fair enough. But it is what it is. It's their business. It's their money. It's their team. They can do whatever they wish. As a consumer, I have a choice. Do I accept what they put out there and remain entertained by them, or do I flip the switch? And that's the only two options you have. Now, boycotting this team? I don't think I would do that. And I don't think they will either.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, you know, people overall, a lot of people just have crappy lives. So the Mets are a really nice diversion. Nice diversion for a lot of people. And if the Mets are crappy also, then it's like, okay, my life is crappy. My diversion is crappy. You know, I need my diversion to be better to take my life off, my mind off my crappy life. So I think that's why the Mets are important to people. And just, you know, we've been fans our whole lives. I don't think there'll be like a full-fledged boycott where there's going to be, you know, 8,000 fans at every game like it was, you know, back in the late 70s. But I do think fewer people are going to go to games. I mean, I'm looking right now at the stats of Citi Field. Since it opened, they went from 3.1 million fans to 2.5 to 2.3 to 2.2 to 2.1 million. So I can see, you know, being less than 2 million people next year if the Mets don't do anything and they continue to lose. And I mean, if they end up drawing, you know, 1.5 million fans, that's pretty much a boycott for the most part. And I can see that happening. And these are attendance figures based on ticket sales, not on actual game attendance, where, you know, they announced 25,000 people there, but you know there's 13. So I just wonder, I just think more fans are going to stop going to games if they don't do anything.
Yeah, perhaps you're right. They may. They just might. But you know what? It goes back to that crappy life. You know, I guess this guy, he's a Jets fan too, and they lost. So they just take it out on each other, and the truth is you're all customers of the same enterprise, if you will. Why kill each other? Because you have differences of opinions. And the other difference of opinion is this Marlon Byrd thing. And, you know, while I was just completely tickled for this guy, you know, he had a bounce back season. He's not going to be the future of the New York Mets, so why would anyone want to resign him? I mean, I didn't understand the uproar when they didn't. People got upset because he signed with the Phillies.
Which is ridiculous. I mean, we talked about this. He's 36 years old. He had a great year. He was great for the Mets. He's a great guy, apparently. But $8 million, even for 1 year, would have been crazy. And the fact that he got $2 million the 2 years, that's why he took it so early in the season, because he's like, holy crap, someone's offering me $16 million. I'm taking it. I'm an old man. This is my last payday. So that's why he took it. And I didn't even want him back at $4 million or $2 million, because I think the Mets can do better. I think Chris Young is a better risk than Marlon Byrd.
Oh, I completely agree. I'll tell you what, though. I'm going to miss LaTroy Hawkins.
Yeah, look, Hawkins had a great year. And I mean, I was saying he's arguably the MVP of the team, because when Parnell went down, there were no candidates in the bullpen to be a closer. And he stepped up and he saved, I think, 13 games, blew one save as the closer. So he was great. I think he's easy to replace, because I think relievers in general are easy to replace. I for $2.5 million, I would have resigned him, because that's not a ton of money. You know, there were reports that he was going to get like $5 million or something, and I wouldn't have given him that. But I'm kind of surprised at $2.5 million that Alderson didn't resign him, given the fact that it looked like he wanted to stay. He was good with the young players, so you can't really put a price on that. But I think what it came down to is the Rockies said you're our closer, and the Mets couldn't offer him that. So I think that's what happened. But yeah, he'll be slightly missed, but I think it'll be easy to replace him at a much lower cost.
Oh, that part is not what I mean. I mean, it was a good story.
Yeah.
Just like Marlon Byrd was a good story. And there weren't many good stories coming out of New York last year, that's for sure. But I'll miss him, because you know what? The guy's 40 years old and he's busting his backside still. You know, he's still got pride in what he does. And I don't think a lot of New York Met players have that, or the talent to back it up, to be honest with you. Anyway, Mark, great stuff today. Once again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right. That's Mark Berman, and you can find him over at bloggingmets.com. Coming up next, Alex Hall from athleticsnation.com will be here to talk Oakland A's baseball and the big trade involving Ian Kinsler and Prince Fielder, and the other one involving David Freese and the Los Angeles Angels.
Peter Borges.
Yeah, Peter Borges. I was trying to think of his name.
No problem.
I had the last name right, but I couldn't think of the first. Anyway, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
no.
I think it probably comes from porn as well.
You know what
I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Cosmic Music, 24/7 on CosmicRadio.com.
CosmicRadio.com.
Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at AridiHotel.com or email them at reservations@AridiHotel.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends, and in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show, and joining me to talk Oakland A's baseball and a couple of trades that affected the American League West, please welcome from AthleticsNation.com, my friend, their lead writer, Mr. Alex Hall's here. Alex, what's up, man? How are you today?
That West is getting wild again.
Yeah. The wild, wild West, but the Athletics got a little jiggy with it, so to speak, and didn't make a bad move at all. They signed or acquired left-handed reliever Fernando Ubad. This is a good pickup for the A's, man. They just keep doing it, don't they? No wonder you're always so happy.
I know, right? I mean, the other AL West teams made the big headlines with the big blockbuster trades. And don't get me wrong, those are much bigger deals. But here are the A's. Here's Billy Bean coming through with another very small, under-the-radar deal, trading a low-level, non-prospect minor leaguer for a very competent left-handed reliever. Now, you figure last year, Grant Balfour was the closer. He's gone. He's a free agent. No way the A's are re-signing him. Someone's going to overpay him a lot. He's going to get a lot of money from somebody to be a 37-year-old closer or whatever. So Sean Doolittle seems like the most likely candidate to move into that closer role. He seems to be the most reliable back-end reliever there. But he is also the left-handed setup man. So now you need to find a new left-handed setup man. Well, you've got Jerry Blevins. He's pretty good. But here now they have found, instead of having to just pull the next minor leaguer up from Sacramento, they've gone and gotten Fernando Ubad. Now, to be honest with you, I wasn't very familiar with him. You might say I'd never heard of him. But he's actually been in the majors for 4 years now. He was pretty terrible with the Astros. But last year with the Nationals, he put up some pretty good numbers, a 3.35 ERA. He was striking out about a batter per inning, three times as many strikeouts as walks. These are good numbers for a reliever. This is what a good reliever looks like. Looked like he added some juice to his fastball. It went from about 90 on average to about 93. I'm not going to ask how he did that, but it happened. And that you'd have to assume is the reason that he suddenly became such a functional reliever, is he got a little velocity on his fastball. So yeah, not a huge move like the ones we're about to talk about that the other teams made, but I just have this gut feeling that Abad is going to play a really big role in Oakland's bullpen this year. And as you're getting down that stretch run next year, talking about the A's strong bullpen, he'll be this guy, and we'll all think back to that great move that Billy Bean made to grab another scrap heap reliever in exchange for a non-prospect. And you're going to see him pitching some big innings in Oakland this year.
You know, this guy had a bad knock against him because he played for Houston, and they were god-awful. Don't forget that. He got on a decent team, and he pitched better, you know, and maybe he felt better. Maybe he was just happy to be out of Houston. Maybe he was just relieved to get another chance. But he's going to be a very good addition for that baseball team of yours. I'll tell you that. That was a great pickup. Now, that's what you need. You know, you need that extra reliever in the bullpen, that lefty. And this is what Abad is going to provide. Just another great pickup by Billy Bean. That's why all the baseball community is just jealous.
They should be.
I am. I know that. You already know that, all right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we talked at the beginning of the show, you know, we talked to Mets, and Maron, it's awful. But you know what? Right after we finished doing the show last week, big trade, old-fashioned type trade. Ian Kinsler was traded from the Texas Rangers to the Detroit Tigers for Prince Fielder. That's a monster trade. I don't care what anyone says. Both baseball teams benefit, don't you think?
Yeah, this was a weird one. I like what you said, an old-fashioned trade. It really is, because you don't see a lot of deals like this anymore. You see a big star going for prospects, or you see a three players for three other players, but just that one-for-one, all-star for all-star deal, you don't see it a lot anymore. And it looked weird at first just because it was so unexpected. Heading into the offseason, Prince Fielder looked like one of the most untradeable contracts in baseball. Another 7 years, nine digits left on that deal, and he's already looking like he started the decline phase of his career. He could still bounce back. He's only 30, but he's probably never going to hit 50 home runs again, at least if he was in Detroit. So it was odd just to see that the Tigers found a taker for him. And also, you were waiting all offseason for the Rangers to trade one of their middle infielders. But you figured, I didn't really know what they were going to find in exchange for him. But this one works out really well. The Tigers needed a second baseman. Omar Infante is a free agent. He could have re-signed, but now he won't. He'll go elsewhere. So they had a hole at second base. They filled it with an excellent player in Ian Kinsler. He's a great hitter. He's a good defender as far as I remember, and he's a good base runner. Kinsler is a fantastic player. He's been an all-star before, and he's on a pretty reasonable contract. Not only that, the Tigers have now freed up first base. They can move Miguel Cabrera back over there. He doesn't need to – well, that's a twofold benefit. First, you don't have his awful defense at third anymore, which was the only knock you could possibly have on his game because he's such a fantastic hitter. But secondly, you have a better chance of keeping him healthy now. Why didn't the Tigers win the World Series this year? It was because Miguel Cabrera got hurt for the last month and the postseason. He wasn't himself. And you have to figure that part of that injury problem was that he's playing out of position, was that he's more of a lumbering slugger, and he was asked to be the agile third baseman, corner infielder. That was a role that wasn't really suited for him. And so not only do you improve your defense at third, almost regardless of who you pick up to stick in there, now you've improved Cabrera also, because he gets to focus a little more of his energy on hitting and not on playing a position that he's not designed to play anymore. So I love this trade for the Tigers. Plus, they save a bunch of money. Even sending $30 million over to the Rangers to cover part of Fielder's contract, they're still saving a bunch of money. And a little flexibility. I think, four more years for Kinsler versus seven for Fielder? So this was absolutely a fantastic trade for the Tigers. This was great. But for the Rangers, hey, they got a pretty good deal too. They needed to clear out an infielder. They had Andrus, Kinsler, and Profar three fantastic players for two positions. It would be a waste to stick one of them in the outfield. It's so much harder to find a middle infielder who can hit like these guys, or in Andres's case, field like he does, because he's not much of a hitter. So much harder to find one of those guys than to find a corner outfielder. And so the only thing that made sense was trading one of them. Well, you can't trade Profar yet because he hasn't, we don't know how good he is, and you might sell low on him. I don't know what you're going to get for Andrus. He's got a pretty big contract, and he is a limited player, although his defense is extremely valuable. And then you've got Kinsler. He's a little more injury prone. He's a little bit older. And so he made sense to be the one to go. So you have to cash in one of those assets and improve yourself somewhere else. And they made it very clear at the beginning of the winter that their focus was on adding some offense. They have a great pitching staff. It could be even better next year when guys like Matt Harrison, Colby Lewis is re-signed. When these guys come back and start contributing again, adding on to guys like Darvish and Holland, that pitching staff is fine. They are stacked. And their bullpen is as well. So they needed to get that lineup back, because it's weird to see a Rangers team that doesn't have a good lineup. That's one of the first times in my life that I've seen that. They were average at best at the plate last year, so they needed to add a big presence. And sure, I did just say that Fielder is entering the decline phase of his career. But hey, man, stick him in Arlington? I mean, he could hit 30 or 40 homers there. And so you've added that presence to your lineup. Now that middle of the order can have Fielder and Beltre, and maybe they re-sign Nelson Cruz, or I don't know, and they still have Alex Rios there. So suddenly that lineup is looking a lot better. They're going to pay a little bit of extra money, but they have it to spend. It's okay. They haven't been re-signing guys like Josh Hamilton and Mike Napoli and David Murphy, and so they've got to have some extra money lying around to pay a guy like Fielder. It's not that much more to pay Fielder than to pay Kinsler when you consider the extra money they got. So, yeah, great trade for both teams. I love it for the Tigers, and I really like it for the Rangers.
Man, I really like this trade. It was old-fashioned, the kind of trade that you wish happened more often, but it doesn't. And this is a win-win for both teams, too, because Detroit, they got that albatross of a contract out from under them, which was very good for them. Secondly, like you mentioned, they got to bring Miguel Cabrera now back to first base. That's got to help. Third of all, they can put Nick Castellanos, the highly touted prospect, at third base. And they saved some money under the cap so they can re-sign Max Scherzer if they wish to do so. So, I mean, they really did make a great trade. And the other side of this coin for Texas, that was good stuff. Because they got their home run hitter that they desperately needed. They weren't that interested in trading Jurickson Profar or Elvis Andrus. So Kinsler was on the block before, too, if you remember. So, mm-hmm. I mean, this was not a surprise that he was moved, but it was a surprise that they moved him for Prince Fielder. But then again, like you absolutely pointed out, 100% spot on, there's not that much difference, really, in payroll and in time served. And both teams benefited. And that's what you want to see in a trade, man.
Yeah. And as an A's fan, I love that the Rangers are going to be paying Prince Fielder in 5 years.
Yeah, I guess you would. But he could hit 40 home runs in Texas. In fact, that was the speculation that he would have signed there originally, but then Detroit came up with that massive contract because that's where he was headed, I thought. And he can bat fourth there. That's the other thing, too. He didn't bat cleanup in Detroit, so, I mean, he needed to do that. That's where he bats. That's where he feels most comfortable. And Adrian Beltre can basically bat anywhere.
And there's space to DH him in Texas as well. There's Victor Martinez for another year in Detroit, but Fielder can DH now if they want him to, and he really should.
Yes, he should. That's the other thing about Prince Fielder. You know, people talk about him as being heavy and whatever, but this is a guy who plays every single game for, what, the last 4 years he's played. So, I mean, he's had quite a streak. So, great trade, man. Great trade for that whole deal down there. I got to tell you, both teams benefited. It should be interesting, the West and the Central, because of this trade. And then the other trade that affected the American League West, the St. Louis Cardinals and the Los Angeles Angels. This one caught me by surprise, man. David Freese and Fernando Salas were traded to the Los Angeles Angels for Peter Bourgeot and a rookie prospect. One of the, I guess it depends on who you ask, outfielder Randall Grichuk. Good trade for both teams, or good trade for St. Louis?
Well, this one was a lot more interesting in some ways. These were both players that it was almost a given that both of these guys were going to get dealt this offseason. They were already flying around in rumors. Borges was supposed to maybe go to the Phillies. They were talking about Freeze maybe going to the Yankees. Borges needed to go because the Angels have enough outfielders, and center field is Mike Trout's territory. He needs to be there. I mean, Borges is a better fielder, but if you have a guy like Trout that can play center like he can, he needs to be there. You can find a new home for Borges. And Freeze was no longer needed in St. Louis because they have Matt Carpenter playing out of position at second base. He played quite well there, but he's been a third baseman for his whole pro career. So now, getting Freeze out of the picture, they can move Carpenter back to third, where he sort of more belongs, and they can stick Colton Wong at second base, as he has made a name for himself, and he looks ready for a chance in the majors. So this opens up a spot to play the next generation of young player in St. Louis and get them all in their proper, comfortable positions. So dealing these two players makes a lot of sense for both teams. Overall, I like this better for the Cardinals than for the Angels, but I'm not as down on it on the Angels side as some other people have been. It's great for the Cardinals. They improve defensively at three different positions. Carpenter is better than Freeze at third. Wong is better than Carpenter at second. And Borges is better than whoever in center. Borges is one of the best center fielders in the game right now. He's a fantastic defender. However, he's not that much of a hitter. He's all right, and he's had his moments. But he's mostly a defensive-minded center fielder. But of course, now you look and the Cardinals have just signed Johnny Peralta to play shortstop. So they've got a hitter at a key defensive position. Maybe it's okay to sacrifice some offense to get that defense back in center. So, man, that Cardinals team, I mean, we give Billy Beane a lot of credit, but there's the Cardinals just rolling along and along and just restocking, refilling those holes, finding excellent players that fit well together. So I love this one for the Cardinals. Plus, they picked up an interesting prospect in that minor league outfielder. He might not pan out, but he's got some interesting tools. On the other side, the Angels getting David Freese, they're getting panned a little bit because, again, Borges did have some interest around the league. Some teams wanted to trade for him, and he was kind of their biggest trade chip. They don't have a lot going on. They have no farm system at all to speak of. And no one's gonna trade for some of their higher priced players. We'll get into that in a little bit here. So Borges was one of their biggest trade chips, and it seemed peculiar to cash him in for an injury prone third baseman rather than, say, a pitcher, which they desperately need. But you know, they needed a third baseman too. They had a bunch of garbage there last year, with the exception of Alberto Callaspo, who they dealt to the A's, so he's out of the picture. They needed a third baseman. Freeze is not great. I mean, he's known for that 2011 postseason where he got the NLCS MVP and the World Series MVP. That's a real nice distinction, but what it really means is that you played out of your mind for 3 weeks. Still good, but it doesn't tell me that much about who you are as a player. And so what he really is as a player is a guy with average defense at third, a little bit of pop in his bat, and a lot of back problems. He is good. Don't get me wrong. He's an upgrade over what the Angels had, but he's not an all-star. He's not anything amazing. Of course, neither is Borges, but Freeze doesn't do anything as well as Borges plays defense. You can look at it like that. But they also got a decent reliever. They needed some of those because last year they mostly had bad relievers. So yeah, I really like this one for the Cardinals, and I think it's all right for the Angels.
Now the Cardinals clean their clocks. Because Freeze, you know, Freeze is okay. He's had his injuries, like you said. But Borges, he is fantastic. And he's he's the type of player that the Cardinals organization looks for. Great tools. Okay, he doesn't hit that much, but he doesn't have to. Like you pointed out, they signed Johnny Peralta. They have these guys. It also means the end probably for Carlos Beltran, because John Jay will probably play right field now. And John Jay is another one of those light hitters, but then they don't need that. This is a great team who scores with runners in scoring position. David Freese and Fernando Salas. Salas can get a few spot starts too. And that's the thing. He can get in there and pitch. And he's going to get the opportunity in Los Angeles. So great trade for both, but the edge goes to the Cardinals. Now this question came in, and we've only got about 8 minutes, Alex, and we have two questions to go here. Let's do the Angels one first. Do you think the Angels will be a bounce-back team, or will they blow the team up if they fail to make the playoffs this season?
Well, I got to go with bounce-back, because how do you blow that team up? You really can't. You're stuck with Pujols and Hamilton. And I know we were just talking about how Fielder's untradeable contract got traded, and we've seen other things. Vernon Wells got traded. Mike Hampton got traded 10 years ago with that awful contract with the Rockies. Carl Crawford got traded with his bad contract. So you can get rid of these things, but to trade a guy like Pujols right now, you're going to have to take back an A-Rod or some other or a Ryan Howard, something like that, some other toxic contract. So you're stuck with Pujols and Hamilton. You've got a lot of money invested in C.J. Wilson and Jared Weaver. There's your core. They're not going anywhere. I mean, I guess you could trade Wilson or Weaver if you really wanted, but why? I mean, are you going to find a better pitcher for the money that they're making? Probably not. I mean, pitchers are only getting more expensive by the day. So there's really not a way to blow this team up. And, of course, you're not going to trade Trout. Why would you ever do that? Why would you trade the best player in baseball? Especially when he's still on his, you know, rookie contract making no money at all. So there's no way to blow it up. You have to hope for a bounce back. The problem is you're going to have to bounce back through player comebacks, you know, veteran comebacks, Pujols getting healthy and being good again, Hamilton remembering how to hit, because you can't do it through trade. There's just nothing to trade. Like we just said, there's no farm system. Borges was the only real trade chip. What else is there? You're going to trade Howie Kendrick? Okay, who's going to play second? You're not going to find a better player than Kendrick through trade unless you go and sign Robinson Cano. Well, maybe they do that. So if they're going to bounce back, they're going to need to go big here. They need to go all in, sign a couple of big free agents. I thought they'd go after McCann, but he went to the Yankees. They're going to need to go sign themselves a couple of big starting pitchers. I hope they don't get Bartolo Colon, but sounds like they're going after him. And he's pitched there before. He won a Cy Young there. I'm sure he wouldn't be averse to a return. They need to sign like two good starting pitchers, you know, two number two, number three guys, and get that rotation right, because their pitching was terrible last year. And there was no reason to expect it would be anything but terrible heading into the season. It looked bad, and it ended up being as bad as it looked. So they need pitching. The lineup really isn't that bad. The only holes they have were third base, and they just filled it. And, I mean, they could get a better catcher maybe, but Chris Ionetta is not the worst thing in the world. He can get you there. Again, I think they should have gone harder after McCann maybe and really just gone big and gone for win now all in. Hey, you still got some options out there. You can get Pierzynski or Salta Lamacchia. So I'd like to see them sign a catcher. I'd like to see them sign a couple of big starting pitchers and find themselves some relief help somewhere. But, yeah, definitely bounce back. They have too much money invested in too many amazing players and too much talent to just blow it up. There's no way to effectively blow it up. Can't be done.
Yeah, I think they're not going to bounce back, and they can't blow it up. I think they're going to be what they are because of all the reasons that you described. Now, we have one more question that just came in. We got about, I guess, 4 minutes. What three things would you like to see the A's do to get past the first round of the playoffs, Alex?
Well, number one, I still think they need another frontline starter. Look at some of the rotations that go deep in the playoffs. You've got the Dodgers with Kershaw and Greinke, the Cardinals with Wainwright and Waka going nuts, the Tigers with their rotation. Sure, Boston's doesn't look necessarily that amazing at first glance, but you figure John Lester's been the ace of that staff for a while. John Lackey used to be an ace for the Angels. Jake Peavy won a Cy Young, and he was an ace for a couple of different teams. Clay Buchholz posted a sub-2 ERA this year. So they had a staff full of frontline starters as well. And then what are the A's trotting out there? 40-year-old Colon, you know, rookie Sonny Gray, who pitched a third of a season, second-year Jared Parker. I mean, those are all good pitchers, but I'd like to see them add that guy who you're afraid to face twice in a playoff series. When the A's go and face Verlander, when someone has to go face Kershaw or Greinke a couple of times, who's that guy on the A's that you're terrified to face twice? It's not there. Now, how do you get it? No, I have no idea. You're not going to go trade for David Price. It's going to have to be another Billy Bean special. He's going to have to go identify another Bartolo Colon, which it's easy for us to say here, but I mean, he keeps doing stuff like that over and over. So, I mean, he knows how to do it. But they need to add that frontline starter. Maybe it's Scott Kazmir. Maybe it's adding him and hoping that he fully bounces back, builds off his success last year, and turns back into that number two guy. It doesn't have to be a Cy Young caliber ace, but it needs to be a guy who you're worried about facing twice in a series. So they need the frontline starter. And an easy way to start that might be re-signing Colon himself, just because it'll be a short-term contract probably. But you got to find one. Number two, how about not facing Justin Verlander anymore? That would be fantastic. I'm sick of facing that guy in the playoffs. We just went up against him four times in the last 2 years, and I think he allowed one run on a leadoff home run in the first inning of the first start to Coco Crisp. So first batter he faced in 2012, home run. And then he didn't allow another run for like 35 more innings. You could play the odds and say he's bound to give up a run eventually, but that's what I did when I was sitting in the stands at game five, and it didn't work out for me very well. So, well, yeah, let's say not facing Justin Verlander ever again in the playoffs. That would be a great way to make it past the first round. So that means not facing the Tigers because he's not going anywhere. And number three, luck. That's what the playoffs are. They're luck. They are getting hot at the right time. They're getting healthy at the right time. They're having the right guy have the game of his life. They're having David Freese win an NLCS MVP and a World Series MVP. They're having David Eckstein win a World Series MVP. They're having Michael Wacha have his coming out party in the playoffs. That wasn't luck, but I mean, not all amazing rookies are amazing right out the gate in their first playoff appearance. You need everything to come together at the right time. Billy Bean famously describes the playoffs as a crapshoot, and it's the truth. It's a 5-game series. It's a 7-game series. You can't have that one bummer of a game where the pitcher gives up 5 runs or hit into that one crucial double play to kill the rally, because that changes the entire tide. So, yeah, you need a bit of luck, and you need the breaks to go your way for a few weeks. And historically, the A's just don't get that. Coco Crisp drops a fly ball in center last year. It helps cost the A's a big game. This year, they have Scherzer comes out for that relief appearance for a couple innings and strikes out Josh Reddick with the bases loaded. Stuff like that. The breaks never go the A's way in the playoffs. Keep making it enough times, and hopefully they will. Heck. Even those Braves teams that went to 12 straight or however many playoffs, they eventually won a World Series in 95. You get there enough times, you're going to get through it. Give me a frontline starter. Give me any team other than the Tigers and Verlander, and give me a little bit of luck, and we'll make it past the first round.
All right, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show, Alex.
All right, thanks a lot, Phil.
All right, that was Alex Hall. You can find him over at athleticsnation.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. Want to thank Mark Berman and Alex Hall for being here, making this an amazing Hot Stove Baseball show. If you're listening to this show next week on Talk Superstation, we will be preempted due to Snark Week. Great comedy all week long from December the 1st to December the 7th at Talk Superstation. Tomorrow, I'll tell you what, we got an amazing show. Memphis Grizzlies basketball, Oklahoma City Thunder hoops. And then we have a very special guest. We're going to talk a little politics, talk about freeing a political prisoner from the country of Iran. Until then, you all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.